When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Welcome to another podcast. It's LiesOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers and great local sponsors like AMS, SNR Remodeling, and Madison Computer Works. Joining us now, Associate Editor of the Capital Times and correspondent for The Nation, John Nichols. As we record this podcast on a Saturday morning, a beautiful summer-like Saturday morning, Donald Trump has tweeted that Steph Curry, probably the number one basketball player in the NBA for the Oakland, San Francisco team, the Golden State Warriors, is not welcome at the White House. And then last night,
invitation withdrawn.
Yes, invitation withdrawn. Last night at the White House, this is what Donald Trump said about players that take a knee during the national anthem.
Wouldn't you love to see one of these NFL owners, when somebody disrespects our flag, to say, get that son of a bitch off the field right now, out, he's fired. When people like yourselves turn on television and you see those people taking the knee when they're playing our great national anthem.
When Colin Kaepernick did this, I said, I don't think that's a very effective way to get people to come to your point. I think the national anthem is something universal. But it is his right to do so. And for Donald Trump to criticize private Americans for dissenting, in the last week, he's gone after an African-American ESPN columnist. He's gone after two very high-profile African-American athletes. Do you think any of that has to do with him and an Alabama primary
for
the U.S. Senate?
Yeah, those remarks were, to clarify, those remarks, I believe, were delivered in Alabama.
They were.
Yeah. And in the context of him endorsing a candidate who no one likes, right? He acknowledged in the speech that he might have made a mistake, which is true. I mean, he's backing a crook, right? Luther Strange.
Uh-huh.
And I actually think, I know this is going to sound horrible, maybe the at once most complimentary and most condemnatory thing I will ever say about Donald Trump in the same line.
Can you speak up a little bit, John?
Yeah.
Okay.
This may at once be the most complimentary and condemning thing I say about Donald Trump in the same sense. But I think he knew exactly what he was doing.
Uh-huh.
Because I think he knew he was in Alabama endorsing a candidate who is trailing against a candidate who is backed by most of his base in a Alabama special election to fill the Jeff Sessions seat. And so I think he chose to rub raw racial divisions and racial wounds for the purposes of politics, which makes him George Wallace.
Yes. Yeah, that definitely crossed my mind. George Wallace certainly crossed my mind.
Who knew better, by the way?
Who knew better?
Mm-hmm. Would play the race card for totally political purposes, often in sly ways. Not your sly, but
thank you.
The other sly. And it is my view that if someone thought George Wallace was a racist in the 1960s, then you must think that Donald Trump is a racist in the 2010s.
Well, David K. Johnston said as much as that last week.
Yeah, I think you have to make that connection. It's some people, it's a little decontextualized, and they'll say, "Well, Trump's a racist," and I think that other folks then they sort of respond to that. They say, "Oh, well, I don't know if we can say that, right?" But I think if we put this context on. It becomes undebatable.
So the NFL has not exactly the great pillar of courage, but even Roger Goodell, the NFL commissioner, and some son of a former Republican senator, actually put out remarks condemning Donald Trump this morning.
And he's right to do so. And frankly, often noticed somebody who had incredible regard for Roger Goodell's father, Charles Goodell, the great senator from New York, that rarely does Roger Goodell rise to his father's standard. But he's doing so today. It is appropriate to condemn. Although I take my condemnations and my response from the National the Football Players Association, right? The union.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you've seen their video that they have out now, but it is it's incredible. They have the leaders of the Players Association talking about how they have begun in recent years to do an education program that links trade unionism to the civil rights movement, and it explains to players why they have a right and even a responsibility to step up on these issues of race. And it is an incredibly powerful video that I really recommend to people. I think it's on their website.
The spirit of Ed Garvey is well alive.
Well, these are the guys who flew out to Madison earlier this year for Ed Garvey's memorial service. They are part of a trade union that has a history of connection to the civil rights movement that recognizes those connections. But they are really stepping up. And I would argue, if you look at the tepid response from Roger Goodell, the impassioned response from the trade union, and a host of other responses to this, I think that Donald Trump, for the purposes of advancing a losing candidate in Alabama, may well have kind of crossed the line that really.
Did you just say that Donald Trump crossed a line? What?
I know, it's hard to imagine. He's never held to account, but that he may have crossed a line with people that he didn't know he was crossing a line with. And he may have put himself into a position where another significant sector of society and another significant platform, if you will, and that being professional sports, now finds it both possible and necessary to object to what this president's doing.
You know, I don't remember many American presidents attacking private citizens' right to dissent. I have great disdain for the last three Republican presidents.
Do you remember Stanley Cutler, the historian?
Sure.
Great.
Friends with his son,
yeah,
Andy, who's a Secret Service agent.
There you go.
Yeah.
Stanley was one of the greatest presidential historians. He was a historian of Nixon and the Watergate era. Just an incredible figure. Stanley had a great line. It was the singular best line about the presidency ever. So it is the purpose of every president to make his predecessors look better.
Well.
And that is what Trump is doing to George W. Bush.
George W. Bush? How about Andrew Johnson?
Well, no, Andrew Johnson's never going to look good, you know, because he's never sober enough to know he was president. But no, I mean, this is the incredible thing. I favored impeaching George W. Bush for the lawless and incredibly irresponsible acts that were taken to lead us into war in Iraq and a host of other issues. I actually mostly favored impeaching President Cheney, but I thought Bush should go with him. And the interesting thing is now I find myself in radio interviews about the book and stuff like that saying, George Bush would never have put somebody like this in charge of HUD, or George Bush would never have put somebody like this in as, you know, Health and Human Services or something like that. Because the fact of the matter is the degeneration that has occurred with Donald Trump goes way beyond Republican and Democrat, goes way beyond.
Well, let me ask you the question. This is a good place to plug your book, The Horseman of the Trunkopolis.
Horseman of the Trumpocalypse.
Thank you. Even Congressman Pocan had a tough time saying it, okay? All right. Who's Donald Trump's worst cabinet member? Who's the most outrageous pick?
Well, it's probably Ben Carson at HUD, who did in fact say that he didn't want the job, or indicated through his spokesman mm-hmm. he didn't want the job. But the list is very long. You know, you've got to also include Rick Perry, who holds a job that he wanted to eliminate but forgot. Right? You know, and then, of course, the notion, and we're just talking about Alabama, right, this Alabama Senate seat, it's the Jeff Sessions seat. The notion that Jeff Sessions, the guy who tried to put voting rights activists in jail, is now heading a department called Justice.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's a long list. But just apropos of what we're talking about today, I would suspect that Donald Trump forgot that he put Ben Carson over at HUD, because I think he was just filling that position, right?
You remember when Ronald Reagan called his HUD secretary, I think it was Sam Pierce.
Yep.
He called him Mr. Mayor. He thought he was a mayor.
He was on the end of a line of mayors. Reagan shook the next hand. I do. But what's incredible is today Donald Trump is going to remember Ben Carson.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. Tell the story.
Well, Ben Carson just endorsed the guy who's running against the guy that Trump just went to Alabama to campaign for. So in that very brutal Alabama primary, it's one of the roughest. It's a classic Alabama primary. It's sort of like a renewal of the politics that you saw with Wallace and Brewer and people like that back in the 60s and early 70s. And the extreme right, the Bannon, white nationalist, wrong side of everything right, is backing Judge Roy Moore. He's such a horrible judge, they kicked him out as a judge at one point. And he's running against Luther Strange, who's a crook, right? And much like the Louisiana race of, I think it was around 1991 or so, 1990-91, when you had David Duke running against Edwin Edwards, and the slogan was, vote for the crook, it's important. You know, in the race between crooked...
Can you speak up again, John?
Well, the race between crooked crooked Senator Strange and horrific Roy Moore, Trump has chosen the crook, right? But his cabinet secretary at HUD, Ben Carson, has chosen the guy who's more horrible than the crook.
Let me ask you something before we take a break. How did Alabama go from a state that had elected a lot of bad people, but also elected some pretty decent people statewide? Big Jim Folsom Jr. is actually a pretty good guy.
His dad wasn't so bad.
Okay, so, and also former the late Senator Howell Heflin. By all accounts, a decent man. Conservative Democrat, but a decent man. How did they go from that to what we see, this carnival we see now?
Race. That's the answer. I mean, the simple fact of the matter is that... when Alabama was a state that took the side of segregation, which is to say it took the side of racism, that was the political center of gravity. And when the Democrats were around, while many of the elected officials were racist, they were also on most other issues relatively mainstream. And it was a bizarre combination where senators from Alabama could get up and say horrible things on race issues and then vote for social programs, right? Or support education or something like that. When the Alabama Democratic Party finally left the shadows of states' rights to step into, the sunshine of human rights, as Hubert Humphrey would suggest, there's a substantial portion of people who used to vote Democratic who moved over to the Republican Party. Then you merged some of the worst of the Democratic traditions, right, in that state, which are pretty awful in the state of George Wallace, with the extreme right-wing broader set of policies of the Republican Party today. And so you ended up with with a horrible, horrible combination in Alabama of, you know, kind of the worst of both parties in their history. And the end result is that in Alabama politics, you really do have a race to the extreme right that goes way beyond where Trump is, way beyond where, you know, pick your most, and Steve King from Iowa would be, you know, relative moderate
right,
in Alabama.
Right. Listen, I'm just looking at I've just pulled out of a folder a letter, a thank you letter from Chris McNair that I received June 1st, 1992. I sent money to Chris McNair. Do you know who Chris McNair is?
Congressional, or what was it?
He ran against Richard Shelby in the Alabama Democratic Senate primary.
Right.
Do you know what he is famous for?
No.
His daughter was killed in the Birmingham church bombing.
Oh.
And he's an African American who was civil rights leader, and he ran against Richard Shelby. And I sent him money back in 1992. I just picked up this folder.
Probably one of the handful of donors in that race. So.
Well, I'm proud to have that letter. Stand by, John Nichols from the Capital Times with us at SlysOffice.com.
Injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh.
John and I approach personal injury cases in the same way. We want to be certain that our clients are treated fairly, that our clients are comfortable, that our clients know they can trust us to get the best result for them.
It's our professional responsibility to make certain you are fairly and fully compensated. Most of our cases are settled without a trial.
Call injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh at 257-5661 for the personal attention you deserve.
You're listening to SlysOffice.com, where we podcast with great political leaders, provocateurs, authors. John Nichols from the Capital Times with us as we talk today. It's a very interesting moment for the Affordable Care Act. John McCain once again has said no to Mitch McConnell and Donald Trump. Your thoughts on that, John?
Well, I don't think they're going to like John McCain any. Boy, I was listening after McCain made his announcement, which was somewhat to be expected, but usually McCain waits till the last minute to drag the drama out. But after he made his announcement, which I think was obviously critical to stopping Ron Johnson's horrible assault on health care as it exists today and also on the future for Medicaid, it was interesting. I happened to be listening to some right-wing talk radio, and I was fascinated by their response because it was all about that conservatives have to get over respecting John McCain, and you know, because they respect his military service, and as such, then they also respect his political service. And they were devoting like lengthy amounts of time to saying, "Nope, you got to make the break here. You can honor him for his service, but you can't honor him for his what he does in politics, right?" You know, it's like this really desperate kind of intense anger. And then, I'm not making this up, this is local right-wing talk radio, they got a caller, and the guy was calling up to criticize McCain. All the callers, right, they were criticizing McCain. And this guy calls up and he says, "Yeah, I don't even know why we respect McCain, because I heard about, you know, where they had him in Hanoi, and he was staying in a Hilton there." I'm not making that up. I promise you.
Did the host correct the caller?
Yes, the host, to his credit, did correct. But it was sort of like the same thing. Okay, these are the people you're up against.
It wasn't really a Hilton.
It was, but I'm not making it up.
Wasn't even
was
a Super 8.
And the guy was like, the caller was like, "Hey, are you sure? You know, because I heard it was a Hilton."
I have to say that is absolutely priceless. You know, but John McCain is such a complex figure.
Yes.
I've never, obviously, he had a horrible experience in Vietnam. And for serving his country in the military, I have immense respect, not only for him, but for a lot of other people. But I'm sorry, he doesn't have a good track record on health care. And the president is right about one thing. John McCain did campaign on repeal and replace. And if you look at John McCain's statement, he said that he might vote for this if it had gone through the proper process.
Yeah, which kind of makes him not the perfect
player, right. He's not the perfect hero. And yet, you have to wonder, is there something in there that he really knows it's wrong? He's a hard guy to read.
He's a complicated guy. Look, he's flat out wrong on just about every debate about war and peace, just about every debate about civil liberties. Not everyone, but quite a few. I mean, there's a lot of things that John McCain's wrong on, and it's really troublesome. He may have done the McCain-Feingold bill, but he didn't vote with Feingold on an awful lot of issues. With that said, there is a tremendous amount of evidence that John McCain extends in many ways from the Edmund Burke tradition in politics, that, you know, you elect somebody as the representative of a state or a region or a constituency, but that person is not simply an automaton, that person thinks, and that they then bring their own views, their own values to their service. And I think to a greater extent than most members of the Senate, whether you like where he ends up or not, John McCain believes that he is weighing the issue at hand. And not simply voting in.
Yeah, what's unclear, though, is the motivation behind the no vote.
I think there's a combination of things. And this is going to be shocking to you, Sly. You probably never pondered this, but I do believe that some people in politics like attention. And I think that John McCain enjoys being at the center of every debate. Now, that, again, doesn't make him a bad player. Per se. It's simply a reality. We have had other people. Do you remember Bill Proxmire?
Very well.
Bill Proxmire was
standing in the assembly parlor when he made his announcement that he wasn't running for re-election.
Yeah. But Bill Proxmire liked to be the center of things, right? He really liked to be, you know, a maverick and somebody that you had to pay attention to because you weren't totally sure where he was going to end up.
Yeah, and by the way, he was way ahead of his time as far as giving sound bites and TV interviews. He was really good at it.
Do you know, I was on an airplane once with Bill Proxmire when I was like 11 years old, and he was walking up and down the aisle. It was a plane to Wisconsin from Washington. He was walking up and down the aisle, shaking everybody's hand, asking them questions, asking them what they needed. You know, I mean, and so all I'm saying is, but I think McCain is a politician, and he is a politician who likes to be at the center of the debate and a definitional figure. He ran for president of the United States because he wanted to be the guy, right? So we have to put that in the mix. But I think you also have to put in the mix his experience. He went through hell in Vietnam, and he's gone through some pretty rough things since, including getting beaten for presidency and having to appear on stages with Sarah Palin, you know, and
who, by the way, really made quite a dignified speech at the Roy Moore rally. It was really tremendous.
That Palin Bannon coalition, but then also now he's currently really in maybe a life and death struggle. You know, he seems to be beating the cancer that he's fighting, but all of these things, you know, when you put it all in the mix, I think you can't say, oh, it's 30% this and 50% that and 20%. You know what I mean? I think what you have to accept is that somewhere in the midst of it all, John McCain has the strength, wherever it comes from, whatever the motivation, to stop his party's worst excesses.
All right, let's talk about the other side. This morning, Jonathan Gruber, who was the inventor of Romney Care and the Affordable Care Act. So, you know, I got a bone to pick with him on a number of things.
Oh, yeah.
He was on MSNBC this morning, and here is the clip.
So first of all, let's remember that it took 100 years to get to the Affordable Care Act. Okay, we tried to reform healthcare every 20 years. So I think our first key thing is we have to make sure to lock down the gains that we've made. The Affordable Care Act was the single greatest expansion of insurance in our nation's history. And I think it's a bit dangerous to be thinking about next steps before we've locked down this step. Now, so that's point one. Point two is, look, Medicare for All has some pros and it has some cons. The pro is it's universal coverage and the program's popular. The con is that Medicare is actually not a very well-managed program in the sense that there's a lot of excessive health care spending. But in some sense, the key point is we haven't really grappled with the political difficulties of getting there. I think it's a fine aspiration, but I still think we haven't grappled with the fact that it's going to require a massive tax increase, and it's going to really shake up our system. And I just don't think the public's ready for that right now.
We have the most inefficient, and it isn't pure free market capitalism. We have the most inefficient healthcare system in the world.
Well, with all due respect to Mr. Gruber.
Speak up, please.
With all due respect to Mr. Gruber, I hope that he's never sick and has to worry about excessive healthcare spending, as he just complained about, right? You know, what's excessive healthcare spending to some people when they're ill in a Medicaid situation is life and death to others, all right? So first off, he's still reducing it to money rather than beginning with the basic premise, the basic moral premise that healthcare is a right. When you begin with that moral premise, you recognize a couple of things. First off, while the Affordable Care Act was an incredible expansion of access to healthcare and healthcare, so too was Medicare and Medicaid 50 years earlier. So we ought to recognize that we've done this before, and in the past, when we expanded it massively, we did it in a way that was essentially along a single-payer line. And people love Medicare and have pretty good feelings about Medicaid, but they don't have all that great feelings in general, although it's coming up now, about the Affordable Care Act. So maybe Mr. Gruber ought to think a little bit about how to put programs in place that people actually like and want. That's first off. Secondly, his fantasy that people aren't ready for a discussion about getting health care right could destroy the Democratic Party. It could destroy the Democratic Party. Because he is exactly right that you have to lock in the Affordable Care Act's gains, right? But you also have to recognize the weaknesses in the Affordable Care Act and the gaps and the needs that are there. Because if you don't, you will continue to empower the right wing and the Republicans to complain about it.
All right, here's hours before John McCain probably, although we have to be careful. God knows what could happen this week.
Ron Johnson is still on the march.
This is hours before John McCain made his announcement. Listen to Joe Scarborough.
I cannot believe how stupid this is politically. I cannot believe that Chuck Schumer or anybody could have ever signed off on this idea where you're actually going to drive a lot of people towards Lindsey Graham's bill because you're going to, oh, wait a second, socialism, Medicare for all, for a system we already know is going bankrupt, versus returning it all to the states and taking a chance. Well, both of them are radical. Do I want to go with a radical plan that I know is going to bankrupt America, or do we go with a radical plan that may not bankrupt? I mean, how could Bernie Sanders, how could Amy Klobuchar do this? Because it's not just the Democrats they're letting down.
Senator, I understand we've got a little...
so wrong.
Yeah, he's so, wrong on the politics.
Wrong on the politics, wrong on the
and
policy.
Wrong on the policy.
By the way, in that discussion was Catty Kay from the BBC.
Catty Kay. Yep.
It seems to me Catty Kay is still a British citizen. What does Catty Kay have for health care, John?
Yeah, it's a national health care plan.
Oh, that's right.
It, by the way, put in place by socialists. And, you know, with all due respect, what you heard in that conversation was a conversation of people from the past in American politics, right? That was a conversation from like 1988. Should Michael Dukakis call himself a liberal, right? And that's fine to have these nostalgic clips from the past, but those of us who are living in the 21st century know full well that we're going to have a single-payer system in very short order.
By the way, I think Michael Dukakis is for universal health care.
Of course. He's always a pretty good guy. You know, one of the things is I'm always intrigued by people say the 2016 Democratic platform was the most progressive Democratic platform in history. You go back and read some of the platforms from the past. The Democratic Party is only currently kind of getting back to where it was before the Clintons and the DLC and all these people kind of gutted it out. And all I'm telling you is we're in the 21st century. We're 30 years into a globalization revolution. We're 20 years into a digital revolution. We're 10 years into an automation revolution. These things are changing everything about how we communicate, everything about how we work. And at the end of the day, anyone who thinks that with all these gig economy changes and all these people being, you know, forced into these, you know, kind of contract working situations, that we aren't going to end up with a single payer system. Not because maybe everybody wants it or even everybody likes it, but because it's the absolute necessary only way to organize functional health care in America. They're nuts. They haven't opened a magazine in 20 years.
You know, we never talk about it because it isn't really the foremost concern is to make sure that everybody's covered and that people live. But a single payer system would be so good for the American economy.
Oh, I mean, it's just no. You would actually do something that Donald Trump isn't doing, which is you would bring industries back, and you would unleash an entrepreneurial fervor. Do you know what, just to give you a sidetrack here, do you know what Norway just announced? Norway.
A
country kind of different from us in some ways, but little country, often dismissed as Scandinavian socialist and all that. They just announced they have $1 trillion in their pension, state pension fund. When socialists set up, and that's what it was socialists. When they set up structures that are not designed to profit and to promote profiteering in healthcare or in retirement or in a host of other things, it's kind of undebatable. Some of these things work. And Norway is not some hellhole. Norway has entrepreneurship and businesses and people doing really well. But they also have taken some things and said, no, we're not going to let some investor try and make money off this. We're actually going to try and make it work.
John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation. Thanks for coming to SliceOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers.